Good morning, everybody. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are turning towards life. I increasingly feel like we're a radio program, like in Sleepless in Seattle or something, Justin, every time we do the opening part. So this is the Third Space Project. We are 70 weeks old, which is ridiculously miraculous, which means this is our 70th Sunday in a row without a break doing this broadcast. And we have a wonderful source by Justin today that Justin has written called The Con Trick, which I don't know about anybody else, but I read it and thought, oh my goodness, there are so many ways I delude myself and so many ways that I defend myself and don't realize why until I learn about myself and sink deeper into my awareness. So I'm really glad to be reading this source and also just feeling in this moment like a delight that we're doing this as well. And that we have something established. And at the beginning, before we go live, Justin and I do this thing where he goes, right, you do the opening and I'll watch the time. We have this little routine and we switch it each week, we think. And so one of us does the opening and one of us does the, right, it's time to go now thing. And so we have our little routine and I think we both have a cup of tea. Sometimes Justin eats his cereals just before we go on air. Sometimes neither of us have any trousers on. We just look good from here on upwards because we know that that's where the camera goes to. And I feel like it's quite a fun little routine and also fun for you guys maybe to know a little bit of the behind the scenes information of what happens before we go live. So anyway, I'm very happy and feeling very mischievous to be here. And to be reading something by Justin. I love reading Justin's things, obviously, and this is a real treat.
Oh, morning, Lizzie. Morning, everyone. I'm so enjoying the feel of this beginning. and I have to say, I was saying to Lizzie just before we came on, how much these days I feel my fear about how things are in the world and all the kinds of things I imagine are happening and might be happening and might actually be happening. And one of the things that I'm learning more and more is how important lightness and joy and playfulness is in the midst of what most terrifies us. And that, so I'm finding this so helpful. Lizzie was asking me, you were asking me how I was before we started. And I can feel a big shift, like all of that, that I think a lot about the world is still there, but there's something else that's here, which is to do with what it's like to be together right now and what it's like to be with all of you who join us in the morning live, and people who I know that many people who join us afterwards, is it's maybe sometimes one of the ways of coming at the most serious stuff is also to be playful as well. So as you said, Lizzie, the other thing I'm appreciating is this is always live and dangerous. It's not like you can see, we don't have fancy shiny backdrops and we don't have, because we're trying to do something that's, well, that is, it's not trying it. It's real between the two of us and it's real with all of you who join us as well. And that feels very important to me, that it's absolutely real, unscripted, live as it arises in the moment. And there was something else I was going to say about that, but I can't remember what it is now. So why don't we dive in and...
I was going to say, we also haven't got producers speaking in our ears saying, say this and say that.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, go faster, get to the point, you know, all of that.
Stop babbling.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. It really is something. So 70, of course, is an arbitrary number because it's a multiple of 10 and, you know, 10s are important to us. But I realised when you said that, that there is, I don't think there's anything else I've done, a project that I've done with another person where we have kept going with such regularity and over such time. And I feel like we may only just be beginning. We may be way at the beginning of this. Who knows? We'll see. And we've talked a lot about what can come from living a life of practice. And this increasingly feels like practice to me. It changes me by doing it. And I was, I'm preparing for a big piece of work I'm doing with some of our very dear Third Space colleagues next week in a hospital, which we work in. And we're going to be talking about how we practice our way into a new culture and we practice our way into new relationships. We don't, it's not like so often we think, oh, I'll think about it a lot and I'll come up with some plan and I've got all kinds of concepts about it. And it's, that can help, but in the end, it's the practicing our way in. So it really does feel different to have practiced our way into this Sunday morning, which feels now a part of, deep interwoven part of our lives, certainly for me.
So Justin, shall I read first or would you rather read first?
I think you might need to read first because I'm suffering from the technical difficulty that plagued me before on my web browser that's got the source in has frozen. Okay. So why don't you go first and I'll catch up.
Great. Okay, so this is called Contrick by none other than Mr. Justin Wise. So, how easy it is to be up to something while simultaneously denying it. I have sophisticated strategies for trying to be in control while looking like I'm being inclusive, for trying to get people to love me while look as if I'm trying to help, and for being stubbornly attached to my own view while looking as if I'm asking others. Sorry, I'm asking what other people think. All of these allow me to hold on to a particular kind of self-image, kind, accommodating, self-effacing, while simultaneously getting my own way. And they involve some sophisticated kinds of denial, spinning stories that blind me to my real intentions. When I relate to other people in this way, things can get pretty complicated. Sometimes I'm just about able to see what I'm doing while I'm doing it. The intentions which I was subject to become object, moving from the background to the foreground. And then I have a chance to intervene and to take responsibility for what I'm doing. This move requires that we get onto our own contricks, all the ways we convince ourselves of our rightness and deny our part in what's happening. Often it seems what I'm hiding from myself about my intentions is pretty much the worst kept secret of all, known to everyone else but me. And that is why for each of us to develop, it's so important to be surrounded by people who extend love our way, who see us for our goodness, and who extend the kindness and respect required to tell us the truth with care for timing and in ways we can hear and understand, rather than keeping what they see to themselves.
So I will read it as well. It's my browser has recovered itself. How easy it is to be up to something while simultaneously denying it. I have sophisticated strategies for trying to be in control while looking like I'm being inclusive, for trying to get people to love me whilst looking as if I'm just trying to help, and for being stubbornly attached to my own view whilst looking as if I'm asking what other people think. All of these allow me to hold on to a particular kind of self-image, kind, accommodating, self-effacing, while simultaneously getting my own way. And they involve some sophisticated kinds of denial, spinning stories that blind me to my real intentions. When I relate to other people in this way, things can get pretty complicated. Sometimes I'm just about able to see what I'm doing while I'm doing it. The intentions which I was subject to become object, moving from the background to the foreground. And then I have a chance to intervene and to take responsibility for what I'm doing. This move requires that we get onto our own contricks, all the ways we'll convince ourselves of our rightness and deny our part in what's happening. Often it seems what I'm hiding from myself about my intentions is pretty much the worst kept secret of all, known to everybody else but me. And that's why for each of us to develop, it's so important to be surrounded by people who extend love our way, who see us for our goodness, and who extend the kindness and respect required to tell us the truth with care for timing and in ways we can hear and understand, rather than keeping what they see to themselves. So of course I wrote this about me. It should be obvious. One of the moments that really helped me to start to see this, Lizzie, was something I've talked to you about this before, but it was something you said to me years ago. So for it was something you said that I had a way of asking people for help than having done it already before you got to it. And that was so helpful because I so trust the care and love and truthfulness in the relationship that we have, and we're so able to listen to you rather than go, no, it's not true at all, which is such an easy move for me anyways, to freeze and kind of go, it's not true. And then to start to see how, like, what a clever sort of double act it is to ask for help and to have the feeling of being in relationship and being intimate and having people I love close in, and at the same time retaining control. Because for me, I think most of these strategies are control strategies. Like, I'll have myself seen a particular way, like ask people for help, then you'll see me as somebody who's inclusive. But at the same time, I don't want to experience the feel of letting go and having somebody else mess it up or do it in a way that's not the way that I would want it. So I'm managing my image on the outside, and then I'm managing my experience on the inside, and trying really, really, really hard. I think this is like lots of troubles we get into, trying really, really hard to hold both together, like to hope the whole thing won't just come crashing down. And it's such a kindness to have someone who'll say it in a way that we can really get the truth of it and love us at the same time. And it's so hard to do on our own, I think. Mm. Anyway, that's some of the background. I can't remember if I wrote this at that time, but that's one of the ways I've learned some of this.
Also, Justin, so when I read this, I thought, oh my gosh, like, if I was trying to write this article for myself, like if I was trying to say, well, what's my version of this? You know, what would it be? That's where it took me. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, what would I say about myself? And funnily enough, I think so one example that I have, and that somehow came at a point in my learning where it was so glaringly obvious what I was doing, and I was absolutely cringing my head off watching myself and still doing it, which was this thing that, and there was at one time when I used to sometimes go to work with my dad, and there was this really, really grumpy car park man where we used to leave our car for the day. And he was so kind of rude and horrible. I kind of thought, well, I'm going to make that man be nice to us. Like, I'm just going to do whatever it takes so that when we get to the car park in the mornings, we've got someone to talk to who just says hello. You know, it was quite a simple thing. And in my mind, I mean, it makes me kind of cringe now when I even think of it. I thought, well, I'm basically going to, it's so egotistical and awful, like, I'm going to turn him into a nice person. As if I'm doing him a favour by being kind to him and being talkative and being nice. Maybe I'll change him so that he can have a nicer experience of life. You know, there was this part of me that thought that I was being a really good person. And then something, I think it was probably the Enneagram, which I'll say a bit more about in a minute to guide us in this, because I think the Enneagram's been the biggest gift for me to see all my underlying motivations and stuff. But I think I was learning about the Enneagram, and I was learning about the dynamic of one of the personality types called the helper, which I have very strongly in me. And I think there was an invitation in it at the time to see that when you're trying to make people like you, or, you know, do something to make things okay, to notice that it's more about you than it is about the other person, even if you think you're doing something good for someone else, see what you're doing for yourself by doing it. And so with the car park man, it suddenly dawned on me when I was like at the booth talking to him, trying to make him into a nicer person, that I was doing it because I didn't feel comfortable with the way that he was treating us in the mornings. And I wanted that to change so that I could control the situation and make it peaceful and make it harmonious, so that I didn't have to deal with this thing in the morning of somebody being really brusque and rude. And I suddenly thought, oh my gosh, like, that's all about me. That's my trying to control the environment that I experience when we come here. And it's really not very generous at all. It's just controlling and manipulative. And I had this big undercurrent of wanting, like you say, my self-image would be like this kind person who's really kind, and then somebody gets kinder because what I did. I mean, it's like really kind of grandiose and sticky. And then realizing that actually, nope, I don't think you're being generous at all. You're actually being really self-centered because you can't handle the manner of this man, which in the scheme of things was fine. He just didn't want to say hello. You know, God knows what he had going on in his life. Like, it's not my job to correct him or make him different or anything. And that was one of the big kind of shameful, eye-opening moments of looking at what I'm like as a person and feeling so embarrassed and busted by the underlying thing that I couldn't see. And it was the Enneagram that was my friend that told me in a way I could understand and with the right timing through reading and finding this kind of deeper map to my personality structures, where I could get onto myself so that then the car park man didn't have to endure this like horrible, ridiculous woman coming and trying to make him into somebody different every day. And that's what came up for me when I was reading this, was like, oh my God, the kind of cringe factor, the blindness, and genuine blindness as well. Like, I actually didn't see that. I didn't see what I was doing. I didn't see what was happening on the inside of me. I just saw the control. Well, I didn't see it was controlling, but I saw what I was doing on the outside, and I just didn't have the awareness of what it was, my deeper need was for things to be harmonious and peaceful. Otherwise I get really anxious and worried and I just don't like it when everybody's horrible to each other. And so that was one of my big eye-opening moments of like, whoa, if there's this one little car park man incident, what the hell am I up to in the rest of my life? And this man didn't, you know, it wasn't like in my life, I wasn't close to him. I wasn't. So I'm thinking, well, if that's like that with a car park man, I think I've got quite a lot of self-awareness to build here, because as you say, everyone can see our stuff very clearly, even if we're in denial about it, everyone's onto it around us. And then it's like, oh, like the kind of cringe factor for me and the shamefulness of it all, of like, oh my gosh, everyone can see and I can't.
Yes.
What the hell is all that about?
Yes. One of the things that's been, I'm so glad to be in this joyfully and playfully, because I think it's probably the best way to talk about all of this. Because one of the things I can see, and also the Enneagram, and maybe we should say a little bit more about the Enneagram as we go, it's been incredibly helpful for me in seeing this, that that we have habitual ways of relating to the whole of everything, that, and this is what I was trying to say in writing this, that we're subject to, that they are behind, they're like the background of the world. It was so hard for us to see that we are acting out a kind of set of commitments, which in my case has been something like always be in control. So be terrified underneath of not being controlled. And I didn't feel my feet. I said earlier how much of fear I'm feeling these days. And I think one of the things that's going on is I'm starting to learn to feel the fear that's been underneath all the time, but which I never really felt. I felt all kinds of other things. So it's this curious, for anyone who knows the Enneagram, I identify most closely with the peacemaker pattern, the nine. And the pattern here is something like, at least in my own experience, is something like stay in control, because it's very, very frightening not to actually be in control. But at the same time, never, ever, ever let on that you're trying to be in control. Because to be known, to be seen to be in control would undermine the whole project, which is to be loved and to have people in close. So it's this extraordinary, tricky, self-sealing, double-edged kind of paradox, which is I must never really let go and let anybody else have their way, but I must never ever look like I'm doing anything to have my own way happen, because if people get that I'm having my own way, they'll leave me. That's the sort of the fear. And we're all, these patterns get started, I'm sure, very early on as a way of responding to whatever circumstances and whatever kind of temperament we had in the world. And it's such a tight knot. And I can think of so many times when I've got myself in real trouble. I mean, proper trouble for me and trouble for other people by trying to keep both ends of that going and not knowing that I was doing actually either. I'm doing either side of it.
I just have to say I'm laughing, not because I'm laughing at you, but because, like, you know, when you hear something, you think, oh my God, like, I can just feel it. Like, I can feel the ways that I can be really controlling and not want anyone to know, and at all costs, don't let anyone know that that's what you're doing. And for some reason, I mean, I think all of development stuff for me has an edge of hilarity to it, where when I see something about myself or someone sees something about themselves that I can also identify with, often my way of handling it or whatever the thing is, my response to it, it's really funny that we're up to all of this stuff and it's all kind of closeted and like we're taking ourselves so fucking seriously. Oh, excuse my language, I'm probably not allowed to swear on here. But like, we're taking ourselves so seriously that we think that this is how to roll. I mean, it's actually really funny when I think about it for myself. Like, there's this kind of covert operation going on inside, which is completely visible to everyone. I mean, it is really funny. And so anyway, I wanted to explain that in case anybody thinks that I'm...
That's so lovely. And it, but I'm feeling the same. It's so painful to be caught in it, and it's also really hilarious.
Yeah.
It's really good to see the hilarity of it alongside, truthfully, all the pain it causes, all the trouble it gets us into, all the trouble it causes for other people, all of that. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I know for me has been is that the fear of what would happen if I ever got close to admitting this to myself or having or letting anyone else see it, the disastrous consequences that would come. And that's why... well, it's one of the reasons why I so loved what we were doing last weekend after our call. We had this Sunday of the third session of the PCC, of the professional coaching course. One of the things we do is sit and watch some people coach and give feedback on coaching. And one of the things I really got onto watching that is, essentially, if I'm going to be really simplistic about it, there are two moves that we make with one another. We either kind of get it recruited into and enmeshed in other people's whole way of doing this, like, Oh, better not say to Justin that he's being controlling, because then he'll be hurt and then he'll withdraw. And I don't want that to happen. So we get, you know, we just take up our part in the role. Or if we're really lucky, we'll have someone who will really love us, like fiercely, fiercely love us and love our goodness, which I think is the really important thing, who will really, really see the goodness and the hilarity. I don't mean in a diminutive way, just like you're saying, just like, my God, what a thing. And when we can feel that we're really loved by someone and they can see our goodness and they can show us things that help us to see this, and we get that they won't leave, mm-hmm. we get that this is not conditional, and that you're not telling me because unless I change my ways you're out of here or you'll hate me or you'll do something nasty to me, you're telling me as an act of love and care at a time that I can hear, in a way that I can hear it, which is all takes such skill, which is what I think coaches can do, but so many other people can do this. Then I've got a chance to go to begin to, maybe if I'm, you know, to laugh, to see the hilarity of it and the craziness of it, and just to let it soften a little bit. So for example, one of the things I know around you is that you're someone that I can say to, oh, look at me, here I go. You know, when I catch it, I can be straight with you and not feel ashamed about it. Mm. Because I know what the holding of our relationship is that makes that possible. Mm. And so many of us don't have that. Like, we have to really look for it to find it. And also the other side of it for me is thinking about how can we be that for one another? Like, how can we, our learning to be that kind of loving, like unconditionally loving, kind, truthful presence with one another that will help us to see what will really help us, and to smile about it and to laugh about it and to treat our demons like clowns or like fools, you know, to be foolish in the middle of it.
Yeah.
It's what helps us start to unknot this.
Yeah, and it does feel like one of those, what are those knots called that are like, the harder you pull, the tighter they get?
Gordian knot, I think.
Yes, a Gordian knot. It feels like that, or / a section of Christmas lights.
Like fairy lights when you're trying to untangle. Yeah.
Trying to untangle fairy lights. It's like, the more zen you become and the more you can kind of wriggle around, the more successful you are. But the more kind of like that you are, it ruins the whole thing. And I think that's the I think, so as you're saying that, I kind of sense into like what it takes to also feel within ourselves that it's possible to see these deeper motivations that aren't the pretty side of us and feel all right about admitting them. And I think, you know, you're already pointing to this, but the kind of relationship that it takes to be able to admit it and not feel too afraid. I think often our relationships are far kinder than we think, in a way. Like, you know, when I think about it, I think, actually, I can do the thing you just said. I can say, well, look, here I go. And people generally aren't like, haha, you're an idiot. I'm going to now abandon you because you've admitted what you're doing, when they could already see it anyway. They're probably like, yeah. And that's okay for you to see that because I can already see it. I mean, that's the nature of the thing. But I think what it takes is also a kind of relaxation of what we take ourselves to be. You know, if my identity is something far more essential than my everyday grappling with how terrified I am or how worried I am about things or how much I'm kind of trying to manage my self-image around to make everybody think I'm some way, some kind of person that I want them to think I'm like, to protect myself. If I'm more essential than that, if there's something more substantial than that in terms of my identity, then there's like this small little opening that goes, well, I can admit all the ways that I'm kind of defunct because there's something else here, which is my who-ness, my Lizzie-ness, my who I really truly am, something essential, so that not everything depends on me being the kind of person that I need people to think I am. that I can make contact with that part of myself that is real and substantial, and that there's only one of, and that it's me. And when that happens, I can kind of laugh at myself, I can not take myself so seriously, I can let things go, I can, even the really, really sensitive things, I can kind of take a deep breath and say, can I just admit that about myself, even though it feels like death, or like the ultimate shame, or something. And I got, I get this thing, Justin, which is the Enya thought for the day. I don't know if you get it as well, but sometimes they are so, so excruciating. And yesterday, this was mine. So I'm a type 7 on the Enneagram, which is the enthusiast, as you know. And you sign up. So the Enneagram Institute, which is theenneagraminstitute.com, they have a sign up to this daily thing, if you haven't heard of it. I'm talking to everybody. I know Justin's probably got this down. But I got this message, which I'm going to read to you, which made me literally like crumple with shame yesterday. And it says, so it's basically a small sentence every day into your inbox. And you just get a little kind of, it's either a kind of sledgehammer to your heart or a kind of affirmation of who you are or something in between. But this was a bit of a sledgehammer. So this one says, remember that gluttony, the passion of the 7, has to do with more than food and drink. It manifests in keeping our minds full and babbling with anticipations to defend ourselves from feeling anxiety. Watch for this tendency in yourself today. And it hit me because I've been in this funny space of thinking, I don't really actually have any plans on the horizon. And it's even shameful now for me to admit it. But I think I kind of feel all right about my life as long as there's something to look forward to. This is so cringeful. But if I've got something in the distance, I feel like everything's going to be okay because there's some kind of marker in the sand in the future that is going to be fun or something. And so keeping my mind full and babbling with anticipations as a means of, and you know, without that, I wouldn't know. But when it gets said, I know that I'm avoiding confronting this kind of essential anxiety. And the timing of this has come when I'm actually feeling that kind of anxiety of like, well, there's nothing to look forward to. What am I going to do? I, you know, there's nothing on the horizon. And it really does make me really anxious. And then that of course brings like a whole new inquiry. It's like, well, what am I anxious about? Like, what's actually going on that I have to plan? And you know, for years I thought, oh, the planner and then, you know, the seven, I don't think it's me really. And you know, I was really kind of hedging around it. And these days, like just like you're saying, you're getting onto the fear underneath. And I remember one of my Enneagram teachers saying to me once, you scratch the surface of a seven that looks all kind of bubbly and fun, and there's like a deep fear and anxiety that's not very far below the surface, but it's so terrifying and uncomfortable that of course I'm up to all this stuff to not experience the thing that the mechanism was there in the first place to help me avoid. And so I feel like the Enneagram really helps me, and it kind of puts wisdom in the place where I'm just habitually carrying on doing the planning and the anticipating. It actually helps me to go, well, what's actually going on here? Without which, I'm pretty sure, I mean, you know, my history with the Enneagram's kind of long, and when I look back and think of my life without it, I don't think I'd have barely any of the understanding of myself that I have now, just with me alone thinking about it and talking about it with my friends and family. And so I think the Enneagram's a real gift in this particular realm, which is, what am I avoiding? And what are my strategies for avoidance of certain things? And how do they show up? And what does it bring about in my life to not be in touch with the thing that's actually going on, really?
So helpful, isn't it, to see that? And I'm with you that the Enneagram is, which maybe we'll talk about more over coming weeks, is such a wonderful way of seeing this, that we're all basically up to some kind of avoidance, that we're all simultaneously avoiding feeling something and also trying to make sure that we get seen to ourselves and other people another way, and then we're all getting tied up in one another's attempts to do that. And that's why it's such a gift to have an approach like that, but also to have other people. This is this thing I was wanting to get to at the end of this piece that I wrote, which is how important we are to one another, that we why we need other people who we can really feel. Just use this such beautiful language, you can feel what's substantial and real about them, and that helps us also to find what's substantial and real about us, but who also understand that they, like us, are up to the project of avoiding and self-denying and manipulating the world. And when we can start to see, well, we know that we're in the presence of someone who isn't coming at us from the stand of you are broken and look at all the trouble you're causing and I am going to fix you, a little bit like it sounds like you with the man in the car park, you know, that you that you, yeah, you got onto. When we give up doing that with one another and understand that what we're really inviting, you use this lovely language, we're inviting one another into a kind of letting go. We're inviting one another to give up trying to be in charge of it all, and to point out to one another how we can see ourselves and one another trying to be in control of everything. That's when we have the biggest chance of actually meeting one another and showing up in life, and also beginning to untangle it's the gentle route for untangling. I love this I think the fairy lights is such a great metaphor, that the more you yank at it, yeah, the tighter it becomes. And that's how it feels. It's gentle, 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 truthful, gentle, kind, real, hilarious, loving of one another and of our own knottedness and our own complications that makes this possible. I feel so glad in saying that to have had some people around me who are willing to do that, who are willing to love me enough and be gentle enough and to be true enough. I can begin to feel sometimes the knot, my own part in untangling, so that something real and substantial can come through. We've reached our time, our allotted time. So I just want to say, Lizzie, thank you to you for this conversation, and I want to say thank you to everyone. And my commitment is to be here at 9 o'clock in the morning next Sunday for whatever we get up to next.
Absolutely. I'm going to be in Austria next week, so who knows what that's going to hold. But hopefully we'll have a nice view that you can look at, and it should be snowing. So I'll see you all from Austria, and thank you so much, everybody, for being here with us and letting us be vulnerable and letting us be in the conversation in the way that this all works. And I always feel such compassion and understanding from everybody's comments and everybody when we meet people, and how people talk to me anyway about this process of us being in these conversations. And I feel very invited to be real by all the people that I've met and all the ways that everybody participates. So thank you for that part of this as well.
Okay, everyone.
See you next week.
See you next time.